WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Each week on Fresh Air, jazz critic Kevin Whitehead reviews a new album. Today we're going to find out more about Kevin in another installment in our series of interviews with Fresh Air contributors. Besides writing about jazz for various magazines and newspapers, Kevin has been a restaurant reviewer and movie critic. But I wanted to know how he first got interested in jazz.
I get into it in a way, I guess, which is not totally uncommon. I started out, like most people of my generation, as a listener to rock and roll. And then I stumbled on the music of Captain Beefheart, who I guess you'd say plays crunching avant-garde rock and roll. And after I started listening to Beefheart for a while, all rock sounded tame to me. And I started looking around for something else that sort of had the same punch. And that's when I discovered the free improvised music, the free jazz of the late 60s and early 70s. Got into that to a great extent and then started working backwards from there.
Did you have a friend who listened to a lot of jazz who suggested records to listen to or records to buy? Did you do a lot of hit-and-miss record shopping yourself when you were starting out?
More of the latter. One thing that I've noticed when I talk to a lot of musicians who are in their 30s now, I don't know if it's typical of other people, that most of our early exposure to jazz depended on the records that were in the $1.99 bins at the local record store. I mean,
right.
Those are the only things we could afford. We really didn't know what we were looking for. So for whatever reason, you know, I mean, there was at the time in the mid-70s when I got into it heavily for the first time, there was a wide range of music that was available in the bins. You know, and looking back on it now, I know that it was sort of reprehensible in a way because the artists don't make any royalty profits off those. But for people without a lot of money, it's sort of necessary.
How did you start writing jazz criticism?
I guess when I was at Syracuse, I took a jazz history course. And after the professor got up to about 1950, I realized that I knew more about the subject than he did. And then I started reading some jazz magazines, and I would read some reviews of records that I was pretty familiar with and thought that I could sort of do a better job or at least had a different perspective to bring to it. So I started writing for Cadence, which is a small magazine, but which is receptive to new writers. In fact, one of the reasons that I still write for them is that I'm really grateful to them for giving me that opportunity.
You've praised a lot of regional musicians on Fresh Air and sounded really grateful that there are a lot of musicians working in atmospheres outside of, far from New York. And I think, in a way, you're the counterpart of those musicians because you're living in Baltimore. It's not that far from New York, but you're not in the capital of the jazz world. And you're also not writing for the New York press, which is the press that a lot of the musicians and a lot of the jazz critics read on a daily or weekly basis.
I'd say that's probably part of the influence of Bob Roush, the editor at Cadence, who's always been a big believer in the idea that there was a lot of good music that was happening that wasn't from New York. I was born in New York City. I was born in Brooklyn. Grew up in suburban New Jersey and on Long Island. But after I got away from there, I guess I'd sort of developed this attitude that I didn't really care for the way that people from New York acted as if everything in the world happened there. And since there are so many critics who are centered in New York and primarily writing about music in New York, I guess I see it as sort of a counterbalancing tendency on my own part.
Mm-hmm. Is it good for a critic to be able to go to a lot of concerts as well as listen to the records of musicians?
Yeah, certainly. Records don't always give an accurate indication of where a musician is at any given time. There are a lot of commercial factors that come into play in the recording studio that don't come into play live. And also, sometimes you'll hear a kind of adventurousness in someone's playing in a live situation that you'll notice is missing on a record, whereas if you'd only heard them on record, you might not have even known that a musician was capable of this particular kind of way of expressing themselves.
Now, we here at Fresh Air know you as a jazz critic. You're also a musician, and since, I think, 1974, you've played with a group of musicians and a band called Starship Beer.
That's right.
It's something that you describe as nut music.
Nut music, yeah. It's free improvised music, but I don't see it as jazz. I mean, it really, it comes more out of a garage rock band tendency. It's something actually I'm pretty uncritical about. I mean, we produced a record of our own about 10 years ago, and when the few reviews that we got came out, you know, I grumbled that we were geniuses who were unacknowledged the way many musicians do. I mean, it gave me a perspective on how musicians feel about criticism, but it also made me realize that this was just something that I wanted to do for pleasure, and it really didn't matter and what people were going to say about it.
And how did you learn to play?
Let me see. When I started playing the guitar, which was my first instrument, I bought a book called Learn to Play Like the Monkeys, which I think probably should have been called Learn to Play Like the Monkeys Learn to Play. And I got some, you know, I mean, some chord charts there and figured out where the notes were on the guitar neck. And from there to the bass, it's an easy transition. I also play the upright bass poorly. Actually, I play a lot of instruments poorly. I mean, I have like an arsenal of instruments at home. I have like an alto saxophone and a bass clarinet and a variety of other things. I can't really play most of them that well, but it gives me a sense of what's possible, what's obvious and what's not obvious on an instrument. I mean, that's given me some good insights into the work of musicians who sort of fight the natural tendency of an instrument or give into it in some kind of constructive way.
Well, I want to hear how the group sounds, the group you play in, Starship Beer. So you've brought in a cassette of your band, and you've queued it up to a point. Tell us what we're about to hear.
Oh, this is a piece called Jujuka Formica. It's for me and one of the guys in Starship Beer, Pat O'Brien. We're both playing keyboards, and Pat is playing synthetic percussion.
Okay, let's give it a listen.
Really swings, eh?
Which keyboard was you?
Oh, I was playing the sampler that sounded like a little nya-nya voice. That was actually a sample of our guitarist, Wes Minchin's work. Wes had to go teach school that day, so he couldn't be in on the session.
I like it. Does it go on like that? I mean, does it...
oh, yes.
How long does it go on like that?
For quite a while. Oh, I don't know, 10 minutes or more, I suppose, you know.
I remember somebody once saying, and this was a musician, that free music is a lot more fun to play than to listen to.
It certainly is fun to play. I mean, obviously, I find it fun to listen to because it was one of the things that attracted me to jazz in the first place. Actually, a lot of times, well, like I was just at the New Music America Festival in Miami a couple of weeks ago, and to me, a lot of the most interesting music that I heard was the free improvised music because there's just this sense of danger. You know, when people start playing and they really don't know where they're going. But at the same time, there's sort of there's a set of organizing principles that kind of crop up when people are playing free. So it's not that there's no style, as some people maintain, but that it is actually a style of its own.
In preparation for this interview, we asked you to send us a little bit of more background and about you. And I learned some things that really surprised me about you. Probably the most surprising thing is that you went to a seminary
before
college.
That's true. I spent 4 years in high school trying to decide whether I wanted to be a Catholic priest or not. And
did you feel that you were called?
For a while, I don't know. I don't know how to say whether I felt I had a calling or not. I mean, it's been a while. It's funny, though. I read there was a book that came out a couple of years ago called Jazz, Myth, and Religion by Neil Leonard. And a really ingenious book in which he examines how the rise and spread of jazz kind of mirrored the rise and spread of any religious movement. Uh-huh. And in his scheme of things, critics had the role of priests interpreting and misinterpreting the works of the saints and martyrs. So... maybe there was something lingering in the back of my mind there.
I was wondering if critical thinking was encouraged or discouraged while you were in the seminary.
I would say it was encouraged. In fact, I'm really grateful to one teacher in particular that I had in high school who kind of pointed me toward the idea of being a writer. It was something that I really hadn't considered before that.
Was it hard for you when you first started writing to earn a living as a freelancer? And I should say here that the jazz press is notoriously low-paying.
Yeah, it was a little slow for a few years. I mean, I was sort of, in a sense, I never stopped living like a student, you know, and that was sort of an advantage because it never seemed unreasonable to me that I wasn't making at least $20,000 a year. And I don't mean, it doesn't pay well, but I get to work at home. When you work for yourself, you have a reasonably understanding boss. You know, I don't have to put on a tie in the morning. It's about 20 feet from my bed to the office. I get to listen to the music. I mean, for a living, I mean, that's an incredible privilege.
Okay. Thank you very much for talking with us.
Oh, my pleasure.
Fresh Air jazz critic Kevin Whitehead. Here's Kevin and his band Starship Beer with their rendition of Last Train to Clarksville.
Oh.
This is Fresh Air.